The Game of Zen explores the often overlooked ways in which professional, personal, and spiritual growth are interrelated. We dive deep into the life teachings of the Buddha and the mindfulness practices of Zen, revealing how they can help us dramatically expand our possibilities for wholehearted work, life, and play.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Game of Zen podcast. My name is Scott Berman, checking in here from Philadelphia, PA. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend and sensei, Paul, from Boulder. What's new there, Paul?
Hey, Scott. Good to see you today. Well, spring is springing here in Colorado, just starting to bud. And I'm kind of excited because I have my first soccer game of the season tonight. Going to get out there, run around. I haven't played for a few months, so I'm going to be creaky, but I'm hoping that everybody else is going to be creaky and rusty as well. But yeah, definitely looking forward to getting out and shaking it up.
Fantastic. Yeah, spring is coming here too. We're getting a lot of rain, and I'm actually getting excited for this playoff basketball season. So the Sixers are fighting for a spot right now, and the playoffs will be here in about 2 weeks.
Right on. And did I read that Joel Embiid is on his way back in?
Yeah, he will be back maybe tonight, but maybe later in the week. So I think we could use some help.
Good luck, Scott. You know I'm a Knicks fan, but I got nothing to root for there. So good luck to the Sixers.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks. Cool. Well, I'm really excited about today's episode because the title is The Third Poison, Overcoming Ignorance. And this is a very broad subject in Buddhism, and it really leads to a lot of answers and also a lot of suffering. So, you know, we'll start off with a broad question, Paul. Like, what did the Buddha say about ignorance?
Yeah, ignorance was a really key teaching of the Buddha. We've talked about the cause of suffering as the Buddha identified it, which is attachment, right? That's the second noble truth, and attachment manifests in three different forms as craving, aversion, and then also ignorance. Ignorance is actually the one that he considered to be the deepest and the most difficult one to work with in terms of these manifestations of attachment. And we can kind of see this when we look at, say, these other two, greed and aversion, right? They've got a real charge to them. Really, we feel them. We know it when we're feeling craving. We see it in other people when they're, you know, being greedy. Same thing with hatred and aversion. There's a charge to it. There's something very juicy about it. But ignorance can be very subtle. We may not know that we're ignorant, but the Buddha was very clear that the ignorance is at the root of even the other two poisons. It's the root poison. And it's primarily our lack of awareness around our true nature, right? The fact that we are not aware that we are these interdependent beings, that we are not defined and fixed by the ideas that we think define and fix us. It's that very fundamental, even subconscious, lack of wisdom, lack of awareness around our true natures that tends to cause a lot of the other poisons from proliferating in our system. So it's really, really key point of practice for all of us.
Yeah, I also think it's the more that I've learned about this, obviously, the less ignorant I've been about it. But
you think? Sure?
I think that's the way it works. I'm not sure yet. But what's so rewarding, though, is that you mentioned like your true nature, you know, the nature of impermanence, of no self. And I feel like the more that I study and learn, the more I do know myself better, the more I'm less ignorant about my own thoughts and feelings, but also of others. You know, part of ignorance is knowing yourself, but also understanding the other person. You know, what's causing their suffering? How can I make them happy? And things like that. So how do we kind of work that into how does our training and our meditation lead us to less ignorance?
Well, meditation is a path of insight, right? So we are looking deeply within ourselves in order to see our true nature to look. But see, we have to look to see, right? So we open our eyes, we turn our gaze inward. And I want to say, you know, you talked about learning about others and then learning about ourselves. We only really see another person to the depth with which we understand ourselves. If we feel we are a certain way, then that's what we tend to see other people being. But as we become more intimate with who we are and how our self constructs itself and how it is drawn in certain ways, how we have preferences and we defend these preferences, how we're unconscious about certain things, how our defense mechanisms come up, as we see those in ourselves, then we can see those in other people. But we're not going to see them in other people if we don't see them in ourselves. Okay, it goes hand in hand. So we turn our gaze inward, we study ourselves, and that's the looking part, right? We pay attention to something specific, which is what's going on within our own bodies and minds. Now, when we look in a certain way, sometimes we actually see, right? We pay attention. We have to keep up that practice of looking, 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 looking deeply, deeply, deeply. And then we may actually see how we're operating. Sometimes it takes some time, you know, to really see into a deeper level of what's going on. And that produces that insight, which can then help us to have wisdom and act more compassionately.
This is where the word practice comes back to me, you know. You know, talking about practice, this is the more that you practice, the more you learn how to deal with these things. And it's an ongoing thing. It's not like you figure everything out one day and then you're good to go, because there's always something more to learn. So this is what I also find interesting, is that as I've gotten older and I've been in more business environments and had my children have gotten older, I've learned a lot of new things. You know, I'm less ignorant about, you know, the food business, for example, that I'm involved with. I didn't know much about it. I started studying it. Now I know a lot about it. So there's the learning aspect and the curiosity part, but then I also wanted to ask you about denial, because I feel like we all, as human beings, naturally, we get in denial about something. And some people are in denial about a lot of things, and some people are less. So how does that, you know, the motivation to not know something play into ignorance?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to come back and ask how you feel about that, but I'll chat about it for a second with my understanding. So there's a couple of levels of ignorance or forms of ignorance that I think is helpful to appreciate. There's the one where you just don't know something, right? So it's opposed to knowing something, and you talked about that, and then you can learn about that thing you don't know, and that helps you develop a richer understanding of the world and, you know, how to live, you could say. There's also that ignorance, which is kind of an inner turning away, an inner lack of awareness. You're just not aware of reality, of what's going on, right? Now, what's causing us to not be aware? Well, we could be asleep, you know, we could just not be paying attention to something. But very often, the reason we're not aware is that we, at some level, choose not to be aware. We choose not to look at something. And there are difficult things that we don't want to look at. It could be things out in the world, like conflict and abuse and violence. But it also could be things within ourselves, those areas, the vulnerabilities, the pain points, the qualities in ourselves that we don't like, that we don't want to look at. Mm-hmm. And so inside, there becomes this turning away, right? And almost like a willful ignoring. If you think of ignorance as being ignoring, I'm simply not paying attention to, behind that, there can be a drive to not do that, a turning away, an avoidance of that. And this can be very subtle. Now, where does denial come in? Well, denial comes in when we create a story that sort of justifies us not doing this. It can be, well, I don't have to look at this because it's not important. I don't have to look at this because I already know what's going on over there. I don't have to look at it any further, right? We have these ideas or fantasies that we build up in our mind to justify not looking at something deeply, vulnerably, with openness mm-hmm. and with the mind of not knowing. And denial is, boy, we can be in denial for our whole lives. You know, we need to make a choice to meet those denials.
Yeah. And I think that what I've learned too, is that the vulnerability is a big part of it. Like being willing to admit that you were wrong about something or that you were in denial about something is a really big step. And that's where the lack of ignorance comes in. I was thinking of some personal examples, one which is painful, but it was my divorce, really. You know, for a few years before that we split up, you know, I was in denial clearly about, I was like, you know, things aren't great, but we'll make them work. And, you know, I was just trying to make the best of a bad situation. At some point I ended up had a therapist, and a couple sessions in, I realized that I was living in denial, that things were worse than I thought. Probably not able to save the marriage. And the better thing for all of us involved would be to take the next step and figure out a new plan, right? But, yeah. You know, I'm now that I look back on it, I'm grateful that I took that step. I know some friends who are in long-term marriages that are not thrilled and they're in denial about it. And I use my own experience and say, listen, you know, at some point, just admit it to yourself. Like, you know, can you make it here or is this not going to work out? So I think that it's also just being vulnerable and admitting that maybe, you know, things didn't work out the way you expected them to. We all have grand plans. And this also goes as being an entrepreneur, you know, when you're in a business. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about your business career. How often did denial and ignorance come up and help you make decisions?
Frequently, more frequently than I wished, right? There's that first level of ignorance where you don't know something. And I think I generally did a good job with respecting, you know, with my three startups that I founded, respecting that I didn't have the answer and trying to, you know, determine best practices or the best way forward. But certainly, especially with entrepreneurial ventures, there's so much up in the air all the time, you know, so you're constantly feeling your way through, you know, the chart. So you have to honor your own not knowing in that entrepreneurial, but you also have to be ready to make that key decision when the time comes, knowing that you don't know if it's the right decision or not, right? So you're drawn to that. I've also faced that deeper level of denial, that deeper level of ignorance, which is not facing something. And I would say I did that with my third startup, where I didn't admit that it wasn't going to work soon enough. And I ended up putting an extra year of work into it that was not, you know, ultimately didn't bear fruit. So sure, I learned some lessons around that. And there were some things that I created. But the overall balance was based on a hopium, yeah, you know, a false hope that I think if I had looked with clearer eyes, and I had advisors who were telling me that, you know, I should cut bait sooner than I did, you know, I would have avoided a lot of suffering for myself, and it would have been a more forthright path forward.
Yeah. I want to talk a bit about the ego here, because it occurred to me that a lot of times our ego doesn't want to be wrong. You know, we have, especially when we have some level of success, we think that the next thing is going to work the same way, or, you know, and I've been through it a lot in the cannabis sector where, you know, I thought that certain things were going to happen and it's taking longer than I would like. And I've had to say, you know, to my ego, I'm like, you know, that was a pretty good idea 3 years ago, not such a great idea now. Yeah. So I have to accept that I was wrong about that. And move on. And I think that's part of the denial and ego part. But how do most people deal with their ego when it comes to denial or ignorance?
Like you said, the ego has defenses around even being ignorant, you know, in that first sense, and even in the second sense, you know, the things we don't know and the things we're not aware of, the ego tends to justify that or create its own reality so that it doesn't have to, you know, be open to new information. You know, I mean, and rarely is this like 100%. You could say, though, this is kind of interesting. If anyone has ever like interacted with like a raging narcissist, okay, mm-hmm. and I really am sorry if you have, you know, but someone who's just really full on NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, you know, really there's a quality of just being completely locked in, you know, with that narcissistic syndrome. And you can see how that, now we're all narcissistic to a certain extent, so it's good to sort of see the advanced pathology of this system to understand what we actually do at a lower level. But basically they create a reality that's in you know, not in accord with actual reality. And they absolutely hold to that reality as the truth, as a way to explain, you know, what's happening in their life. And, you know, there are public figures, as we know, who basically do this. You know, they say these things that are like completely crazy. They're bonkers. Yeah. You know, they're simply not true, but they actually truly believe, you know, that they're being persecuted.
Yeah.
By everybody, right? That's like their reality, that because they can't handle the openness, the lack of control, the truth, you know, of how they're manifesting in the world. They're not willing or able, you know, to face that openness and that truth. So that's how the ego works. It works in a very, you know, kind of in a sense nefarious way there, but we all do that to a certain extent.
I want to talk about the world and for a second and our country, because I do think that ignorance is a root cause of a lot of the suffering that we have in the world today. And, you know, we can see it manifested in politics. We could see it in wars and conflicts around the world that are heating up now. And I feel like we have a lack in America of what the rest of the world thinks sometimes. You know, we live in this bubble where we think we know everything's the best here, and you know it's not true. And so I think that how do you see ignorance affecting like world issues and society, you know, coming together on more things?
Yeah, it's kind of institutionalized and amplified in our modern culture the way actually all the three poisons are. I heard a great kind of perspective put forth by my colleague as a Zen teacher. David Loy is his name. He's got great books and great teachings. And he said, the poison of greed is amplified and magnified by a lot of our, you know, competitive capitalist institutions, right? Mm-hmm. The form of capitalism that we have right now can do that. The poison of hatred can be magnified and amplified and reinforced through our military industrial complex, mm-hmm. right? At an institutional level. And then I do see that this poison of ignorance is actually magnified and amplified and weaponized through our, I'm going to call it our informational ecosystem. You know, you could call it the media industrial complex, but that might put too fine a point on it. I mean, mm-hmm. it includes all of our media, but it also includes social media. And includes all of the, you know, the web of information channels that are feeding our cultural sphere, you know, that kind of cultural spiritual dimension of our social fabric, whether it's national or global, you know, at all of those levels. And there's all sorts, obviously, as we know, disinformation campaigns that are going on. There's deep fakes, you know, that are getting more and more accurate. There's more and more question around what reality is, and this wobble, you know, in the epistemological space. So I believe that ignorance is being, you know, amplified very greatly. Now let's actually look at these two versions or these two aspects of ignorance that I was talking about, right? In terms of, you know, what we know, actually we can know a lot more because of the open information channels but we are less and less, you know, firm about the truth content of that. So that's all being kind of problematized. You could say knowledge is increasing and ignorance is increasing at the same time, right? And also with awareness, we're aware of more and more social media. Wow, we see how people live, what they're experiencing all around the world. But also, you know, is it true? Is it real? What are we turning away from? Are there things that we're not paying attention to because we're being distracted by other things? Okay. So everything is being amplified and escalated.
I think social media is a fascinating subject because I agree with you that there's a lot of good things that come from it. A lot of things, you know, I now have a encyclopedia in my pocket. It's called Google. Anything I want to learn, I just put it in there and I get information, right? So I'm less ignorant about something. I also love social media because I love connecting with people and I use it a lot for work. I'm also well aware of what it's done to young people in our country and the algorithms that are especially harmful sometimes because they're just showing you things that they want you to listen to. Obviously, there's a whole controversy now about TikTok and the Chinese government owning it and things like that. And so I feel like social media causes more ignorance and then solves some ignorance too at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So how do we know the difference really? How do we tell what's real and what's not? And I guess it's different for every age group too.
It is different for every age group because the teens and below, they're developmentally, you know, they're still developing in a sense, neocortically. I think the wisdom that applies across the board is to question everything, right? To maintain that mind of not knowing, and really not jump to confirmation by not jump for confirmation, not jump to conclusion, not jump to definition, right? We can be actively working against our confirmation bias, right? So seek out sources of information and opinions that go against your view of reality as you understand it or your opinions as you hold them to be, and really stress test those against the reality of other people's opinions and views. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are the two most important things I would say.
I think curiosity is an antidote to ignorance in a lot of cases. I love learning. I love television and books and magazines and newsletters. And, you know, to me, I get a broad sense of the world from a lot of different things. So I'm genuinely curious about other people's opinions. And I think that leads to less ignorance. There's still a lot more for me to learn. I'm curious about a lot of things. But I mean, just the more that I learn about this whole process and Buddhism and Zen and mindfulness, like, that's been my curiosity about that has led to a lot of learning and growth as a person. Right. So mm-hmm. I think that if we could get everybody to be more curious and listen to more mm-hmm. things, I think there would be more, we would come together more as a society. Right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And curiosity, it might have killed the cat, but they've got 9 lives. So, you know,
exactly.
So they can expend them, and that openness, you know, to experimentation, to new things, it's really essential. It's a real saving grace, you know, for anybody in their life, is to continually open yourself up to new and to be, to find joy in that is what you want to cultivate that. And, you know, we have so many places, sources of learning, you know, with the internet, it's like everything we can dive into. And even I don't want to make it like too big a thing too. It's like just being curious about what's in front of you, right? About the person who's talking to you, right? To maintain curiosity about how they're feeling or what their life is about. These very simple everyday openings to what is in front of you. It gets back to what I was saying at the beginning. You know, the first thing is just look, open your eyes and make the choice to look, and then keep looking. And then maybe you see something and then you keep seeing, right? You keep doing this. That's the spirit of curiosity that will really, you know, transform our ignorance actually into wisdom. Cause that's what the project here is, you could say.
Yeah. And I know we've talked previously about deep listening, on the podcast. And that's to ourselves, but also when we're in a business environment, to everybody that you work with. And I think that the better you become as a listener, the better you can be, you know, less ignorant about them and whatever's going on in your company. Or it could be with a vendor or a client, you know, like the, so really listening to what they're saying, you start to learn something about the other person. So I think mm-hmm. that is part of the cure for ignorance, is really like listen deeply, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely listening deeply, and also realizing that you're always going to be ignorant too, in a certain yeah. way, right? Kind of accepting that is an important part here too. This is sort of the aspect, you could say, of the fool, you know, and we're recording this on April 2nd. Yesterday was April Fool's Day. And there's a wisdom in that fool that kind of, you know, isn't trying to like be smart or understand everything. It's just kind of going on, you know, their merry way, just meeting life on its own terms. So we have to also be very humble, you know, with respect mm-hmm. to our ignorance and accept it as a part of ourselves. That's gonna keep us from going into those denial modes and those control modes, you know, if we sort of demonize or pathologize ignorance. So it's important not to do that, even though the way we've been talking about it makes it sound like this poison that is gonna, you know, create all sorts of horrible suffering, you know, yeah. if we don't deal with it. We also have to be recognize that that's part of us, part of our nature, is to yeah. not be aware, to not be knowledgeable, and not be open. So we really meet that ignorance with an open, compassionate spirit, and that's mm-hmm. the way to transform it into, you know, something kind of beautiful and more connecting with other people.
Yeah, and by the way, Paul had a great newsletter yesterday about foolishness. That I really enjoyed. So go over and check out the Zen at Work newsletter if you get a sec. I also want to talk about travel and about, you know, moving away from your home base, wherever it may be. I found that, you know, the course of my life, like every single time I go somewhere different, I learn something about the place, the people, the culture. I come back a little bit different. And I've been fortunate enough to travel a lot of places. I've also been fortunate to send my kids to around the world for different things. And I feel like they've grown and matured a lot from traveling, especially out of the country. So mm-hmm. how does that play into learning and growing and, you know, less ignorance?
Yeah, I remember this quote I saw. I don't remember who said it. Travel is the enemy of bias.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's it. I might have a word or two wrong. It was like Mark Twain or maybe Rudyard Kipling, I think. Travel is the enemy of bias. So bias is one of these, in a sense, fortresses we build around our ignorance to keep from, right, acknowledging that we don't really know. Okay, it's like an opinion we have. So travel is exactly, you know, this amazing antidote to actually meeting the world on its terms, not on your terms, mm-hmm. right? And we learn about other people, but just by being in the fabric of life in a different place is just gonna, you know, totally destroy all your fixed ideas about what life is supposed to be about, right? You've done a lot of travel and just to meet other people, to speak their language or to see the way they phrase things, what they're what's important to them, you know, what their days are like, what the culture is like, what the society is like. It just radically, you know, shifts your biases and your unconscious ideas about lots of things. So super important. It really gets at you know, the question of how do we become aware of our ignorance. How do we become aware of our bias? How do we become aware of our denials, right? It's very hard actually to do this because we get locked in and we think this is the way things are. And there's like, the, you know, like I've been talking about, there's an incentive to keep those things up from the ego. Well, the way I see it is the way we become aware is that we have a clash with reality. You know, something kind of opens our eyes. It's like, well, when our view doesn't conform with reality, at a certain point, you know, there can be, and fortunately, hopefully will be, some kind of a clash there. And if you can take that clash, not to mean, God damn it, you know, that person is a jerk. They're an asshole. These people are not living the way they're supposed to, right? Hold your position about reality, but actually take it to be, holy cow, maybe it's my ideas that are wrong, not like this entire culture or this entire gender or this entire race, you know, whatever your biases may be, this entire town. You have an opportunity. You could say too, I mean, I see, like, say the Me Too movement or our, you know, awakenings that are really in strong, you know, strong waves here now, in these last, you know, 10 years. These are, you know, people that are calling out, please, please, please wake up to something that you have not, you know, paid attention to. So we can have this clash that can come that way. Now, oftentimes people will meet a call like that and they will open their eyes to, you know, suffering or something that they haven't acknowledged, you know, institutional racism, institutional misogyny, for examples. Or they can close down and they can say, oh, well, I'm just not buying this. You know, this kind of attempt to wake me up is just too aggressive. I'm not going to respond to it. Right. And so there's a counter movement, you know, against that kind of form of discourse, you could say. Now, there's a lot of complexity there because, you know, you could say like the woke movement can get institutionalized in a certain way that perhaps, you know, is not serving in, you know, in overall kind of awakening, you could say. And the details are all, you know, really important and subtle to respect, you know, how to live, you know, together, which is always a challenge. But I do want to respect just that initial wake up call.
Yeah.
Oftentimes we need a wake up call to get out of our fixed beliefs.
And you brought up a term called blissful ignorance before, which I thought was interesting, because I think that a lot of people are inclined to, you know, ignore things at their own peril. And I also wanted to bring up physical health. A lot of what we've been talking about is mental and thoughts and feelings, but, you know, being aware of your physical conditioning and potential problems, you know, we're all going to get older and have something go wrong, right? Being ignorant, a lot of people don't pay attention to things. They don't go to their regularly scheduled appointment. They don't get their scans, and things, you know, happen that you don't necessarily know until all of a sudden, like you said, something happens. It's like, oh shoot, I better go see a doctor about this. I know a lot of, you know, men who are like, I'm fine. You know, I'll get my colonoscopy. You know, I don't need it, whatever. It's like, no, go get it now because it could save your life. Right. So this is a little message to our listeners, get your colonoscopies and your CT scans. Right. But
yep.
As far as physical things go, like how do we get healthier by being less ignorant?
I think you just had a good example right there.
Okay. Maybe I answered my own question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think it's something I think about every day, because I think about, like, okay, you know, I want to get ahead of the game. You know, I'm not getting any younger here, and I want to do things that, you know, when I'm in my 60s and 70s, that I'll be able to, you know, hang out and play golf and you can play soccer, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand. You could say, I mean, if we look at ignorance as a poison, right, that's like a medical model. So getting healthier, right, is to reduce that ignorance. So you could say, like, actually getting physically healthy also serves to, you know, make you less ignorant, because you're more whole. You're more whole, and you actually might be less prone to your own biases and your own contractions and your own ignorance. You might be more, let's put it this way, you might be more open-minded and more curious and more able to travel when you are physically fit, right? I mean, I think we would all agree you probably are, you know, have this inherent energy to meet the world.
Yeah. Speaking of open-minded, let's switch back to a subject that we talked about last week, which was psychedelics. And how do they play in, you know, in your experience and what you're coaching people on is, how does that lead to more awakening and more knowing yourself?
Yeah, I think just at a very base level, you know, psychedelics can help in opening a window on a terrain that you were not aware of, you know, the capacities and the qualities of your own mind. So it can meet that. You become aware of a landscape of your body mind, which you may not have realized was there. And so right from the beginning, you know, those initial experiences can work against, you know, toxic ignorance by giving you a greater appreciation, you know, of what's going on in your own life. And then, you know, proceeding with that, things like microdosing, you know, can maintain your capacity for awareness. They can keep, you could say, like, kind of keep those windows open, keep mm-hmm. them open, so that you become more and more aware. Now, the way I look at it, and I think I shared this in that episode, is, you know, you can do this with meditation too. That's what meditation is all about, is to open these windows, open these doors, knock down these walls, and then live in the openness and the truth and the fullness of who you really are, right? So in a sense, those psychedelics are just a way to go about helping with that process.
Yeah, and I think there's no one right answer, of course. There's psychedelics certainly aren't for everyone. Some people don't like meditation or mindfulness either, but I think that everyone can, the more that you recognize ignorance and pay attention to it, it could be very little subtle steps. You mentioned it earlier. It could be a subtle thing. And if you just have the open-mindedness of, hey, I want to learn something new about myself or about this other person, that leads to less suffering, right?
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to also just talk about the Eightfold Path a little bit, because when I started learning the Four Noble Truths and learned that ignorance was something, it was a really good revelation for me. Oh yeah, this is, I could see how this is causing suffering. Then I got to the Eightfold Path and I'm like, okay, let me think about right view or right speech or right action here. And how does, when you follow that path, how does it lessen your ignorance?
Well, I think the Eightfold Path is the actual, right, it's the actual prescription for working with the suffering caused by our attachment. So, you know, how does it do it? That's the purpose actually of the path, is to learn about ourselves and to wake up to who we are. That's the actual prescription for what we're doing. So you could say, when we practice right speech, we are becoming aware of how our speech affects people and how our speech affects ourselves. Right? We're reducing our ignorance around that when we practice right livelihood. And it's a practice, right? We really have to look at it. It's not like, oh, we do it this way. This is how you practice right livelihood. You check, you know, you do these things. No, it's a practice of discernment. You know, what is right livelihood for me, for every person individually? So you practice it and then you see, oh, this is the way to live more wholeheartedly, the way to live in a way that's more in accord with reality, that produces less suffering. So your mm-hmm. ignorance is being reduced, because before you didn't know that. We worked in a way that wasn't wise, that didn't have insight. We didn't know that. We didn't mean to create suffering for ourselves and others. Some people do, but most of us don't. We don't want to do that, but our behaviors and our autopilot mechanisms do that. So, and we're doing that out of ignorance. So we learn. It really is a path of learning. It's a path of learning and growth, and things become, you know, more wholehearted and holistic. I want to add this too. It's an infinite path. The way you know you're on a path of, say, reducing your ignorance, becoming more wise, becoming more wholehearted, is that the path extends infinitely in front of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. There's no end. There's really no end to the path. And you may find this, and I think everybody, the listeners can connect with this. If you ever found something that you just really dig, like you're really passionate about, it could be cooking, it could be music, it could be a certain subject that you're interested in, poetry or travel, you know, adventure, whatever, something like this that you just, and maybe you've learned it at an early age, it opens up to you as like, wow, I can do this for the rest of my life. There's no end to this. I can do this forever. And that excites you. That's, you know, you're on a path of reducing your ignorance because you're never going to master it.
Yeah.
Right. But you're going to be able to explore this really vast domain. That's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about two things happened during the early days of COVID that were pivotal for me. One was meeting you and starting to work with you. And the other was cooking, actually. I figured I was going to be home for a while. Let me like start to look at a recipe. And I was like, my daughter was cracking up. I'm like, I went to the market and brought a recipe and actually the food came out better. Mm-hmm. Hallelujah. You know, it's like I'm a very average cook, but I got better at it because I concentrated more on it and I learned something about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there's all these little things that you can do in your life to really learn something new and get better at it, really. And you're right. It never ends.
Yeah. Yeah. When we wake up to the immensity and richness of a certain subject, then that's the doorway, you know, to a really joyful life is to step forward. And that's the path of transforming ignorance. It's actually to the meeting what you don't know with that spirit of curiosity and learning and development. And then when you have that kind of wake up, we all have the opposite, right? It's like, okay, I want to figure this out. I want to master this subject, right? But, and then oftentimes like, okay, now I've got my opinion on it. Okay. Yeah. Now I know how to do this thing and it's closed down, right? We might think we've got it going, but it's not. Now the ignorance is really taking over when we think we really have it mastered.
Right. And there's always something more to learn, you know, that's the beauty of life. You know, there's always another book to read. There's always another place to travel to. And, you know, I just want to encourage everyone to just spend time working on yourself as much as you can, because it leads to less ignorance. And it also does help you with the world, you know, your everyday activities.
Yeah. Find the thing you love to do and do it as often as you can daily, if you can. And with that spirit, try to apply that spirit to all aspects of your life. And that will be the antidote to ignorance.
Oh, that's fantastic, Paul. I think that's kind of a good place to wrap it up today. We will be talking on future episodes about greed and aversion too, because I think that when you look at those three things together, the better you are at handling them, the more, you know, your enlightenment goes up, right? I mean, you just have... but it's a practice, right?
Yeah, it goes from like 6 to 8. It's really
doesn't go away. Yeah, but anyway, Paul, anything final to add today?
Oh, it's just been a pleasure to chat with you today. It's the day after April Fool's Day, so we didn't play any April Fool's jokes on each other or our listeners, which is good because I'm terrible at them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
cool. Fantastic. Well, thanks, Paul. We want to also remind you to check out Paul's website, Zen at Work, and sign up for a coaching session. Like and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. And we will be back soon with a new episode. Thanks again for listening.
Yeah. And actually, Scott, I'll just jump in and say I'm in the midst of doing one-on-one work and also running these catalyst groups, which I'm having a lot of rich work with. So if you're interested in working with me one-on-one or these catalyst groups I'm putting together where we do deep dives into our vows to self-work and other, and we share with others on the same path, it's some really powerful work. I'm really enjoying working with it. So if you're inclined to work with me on those things, I invite you to reach out on my website and get a discovery call together with me. I'd love to chat.
Yeah, the Catalyst group has been excellent. I really am enjoying it. And it's really been great to meet the other folks in the group. And we are going to have an episode down the road too about groups and working with other people and learning from other people, which is also a way to cure some ignorance.
It's really essential. Yeah, it really is, to kind of support each other and sometimes to let our, you know, we don't know we're ignorant until somebody tells us. So
yeah, awesome. All right, cool, man. Thanks again. And we will see you all again soon.
Good to see you, Scott.
Thank you for joining us on this exploration into Zen Buddhism and its transformative influence on work and life. We hope you'll subscribe, share, and comment wherever you get your podcasts. May your journey be one of continuous growth and mindful living. From all of us here at Game of Zen, wishing you peace and prosperity on your path ahead.